I am not an organized person by nature. Just never started out that way. I've always been kind of a it will work out person. Things will just turn out. They'll be okay. And in some areas of life, that's okay. But most areas, it probably doesn't work out very well. And over the years, I've had to learn to become more organized. But I would say that now, as I've gotten older, because I did turn 50 last year, I have become selectively organized. In other words, I've figured out what I really need to be organized. And generally, I focus on those things and then things that maybe aren't as important, because I've realized over the years I can't be super organized at everything. And when it comes to hospice, and specifically hospice case management, organization is key to our success. And hospice is really a work of habit and routine. And it's easy to get into healthy habits. Well, I should say it's easy to get into unhealthy habits. And it can be very hard to get into healthy habits. But I will tell you that the habits that we have when our caseload is small, we will drag into our caseload as it's bigger. And if we have poor habits, those habits do not scale well. And as our caseload grows, especially in a time of crisis or a time of growth for the company, we can really start to have some challenges with being successful. And I've talked before on this show how I believe it's important that we, that our goal ultimately as case managers is an 8-to-5 schedule 90% of the time. And today's show, we're going to talk about how to be more organized. I know that sounds boring, but I think this will be helpful. This is James Dibben, and welcome to the Hospice Nursing Podcast. Well, welcome back, fellow hospice nurses across America. I want to thank you for tuning in to your show. That's right. Once again, this is the only show dedicated to practical help for hospice nursing success. Our goal in this show is to help you, the hospice nurse, be more successful at this challenging end-of-life work that we do. I am your host, James Dibben, from ConfessionsOfAHospiceNurse.net, and welcome. Well, it has been an interesting week here at the Dibben House. I have been sick all week, so hopefully my voice doesn't sound too bad. I missed a little bit of work this week. All tests came back negative in this world of COVID. I guess we all have to mention that, don't we? That maybe we just, I had the common cold. I didn't know it was even still out there, but here we are. It is January the 16th of 2022, and it is official. Mark your calendars. The common cold still exists because I tested negative for everything else and I'm not really an allergies person. So there you go. That is your health report from the Kansas City metropolitan area in January of 2022. The common cold still exists. Do you feel smarter now? I hope so. So today on our show, we are going to take on what was part 4 in my burnout series that I wrote at ConfessionsOfAHospiceNurse.net. And we are going to talk organization. And I know that sounds kind of dry, and hopefully I can keep it from becoming that way. But I had this really fantastic boss many, many years ago, and his name was Chuck Schroeder. A lot of people call him Charlie, but I always knew him as Chuck, and I have known him for quite some time, and he's just been kind of a mentor to me. And back in the late 90s, I went to work for him and got a chance to work for him for a couple of years. But one of the things that he used to say to me a lot was, James, you need to plan your work and then work your plan. And that has stuck with me. I have not worked for Chuck in 20 years. I haven't worked for Chuck. But I learned some amazing things in the 2 years that I worked for him. And he was a very good organizer person. And so that's kind of what today's show is about, is it's about us not being surprised every day, all day long with this work. That there are some things that we can expect and that we should, you know, plan for. And so for today's show, I want to just talk about some things that we need to be doing in general that help us be more proactive in our day. I've talked a lot about the importance of making sure that we happen to our days and that our days don't happen to us. And so we're going to talk about that today. And I have some nice bullet points that I think will be helpful as we kind of march our way through kind of what was article number 4 in my burnout series that I wrote and published. I did publish that on Facebook and a few other places, but the main place that I share a lot of my stuff is the Hospice Nurse Support Group on Facebook. And this article definitely got some nice attention, and so I just continuing to work through that on the podcast here. So let's just dig into this, because we're all very busy and we have a limited amount of time to spend listening to James just rattle off a bunch of ideas. But I hope that today's show provides you with some useful ideas and tools that will help you be more successful as a hospice case manager. We need as many of you as possible to stay in this work and to love it. And I really want you to feel like you have control of your days and that your days do not have control of you. So let's just not waste any time here. Let's just get to the meat of today's show. So number one of our bullet points is something that I think we actually get away from, and is something that if we're not careful, we can mess this up. And what it is simply put, it's a new schedule every single week. Now let's just stop and think about this for a minute, okay? Because at our hospice, all of the nurses are required on Monday to send in their schedule for the week, who they plan to see each day. It'll have a list of their patients so we can see who their caseload is, even though we keep track of that and know that on our end. But they're required to submit that schedule. Now here's the thing, is that this is hospice. And by the end of the week, your schedule is not going to look like what you thought it was going to look like, is it? People, conditions of our patients change. We move people up. We see them a day early. Somebody cancels. We move them a day late. But what I don't want us to get where we submit the same schedule every week. Let's just say that it's just the same one every single week. We just send it to our boss because it keeps them happy, maybe, or we just don't think about it and we just send it. And it's identical. And we don't even do it, do we, sometimes? It's the schedule's there, and we have these 5 patients that we're going to see Monday. And then we only see 3 of them. But really what's happened is a couple of those Tuesday people we actually see on Monday now, but we never updated the schedule. So let's not do that. Now, my schedule has always been a digital one. And actually, I hadn't even thought of this till just right now. But if I have some time, I will try to link everybody. I'll find a way to share this with you. But I have like a spreadsheet that I do. You could do this in Google Docs or in Excel. But I have this wonderful spreadsheet that I use that I keep track of all of my patients on it. And down below, I have their name, their address, phone numbers, caregivers, all that kind of thing. And I always print it and stick it on a clipboard in my nurse's bag. So I have everybody's numbers nice and convenient for me right there in front of me. So when we talk about this schedule, and if I'll try to embed it or find a way to get it to you, the listener, and I'll try to save it as like a Google Doc, so that way it'll be import. You could import it into anything. I think a lot of people have Excel, but feel free to reach out to me at james@confessionsofahospicenurse.net, and I will get this thing to you because I created it a bunch of years ago, and it's really handy. It has each day of the week. You can update it, you know, using your computer or whatever, and just print it right up. I have lots of my nurses are using it now, and it's really handy. But anyway, kind of get back on track here. So let me ask you this. If you're a financial budgeter person, and especially right now the big name in finances, and he has been for 20 years, is Dave Ramsey. So I'm kind of a Dave Ramsey guy, and many people listening to this show right now probably are too. But what does he tell you? That you have a new budget every month. No 2 months are alike. Well, no 2 weeks are alike in hospice either. And just like you have to do a new financial budget each month, you're going to have to do a new visit schedule each week. Okay? And so I want to share a couple of nuances with you today on the show when it comes to making your schedule and some things for you to think about. So at our organization and many organizations, their IDT, IDG, whatever it is you call it, your organization, can be on Wednesdays a lot. And so what happens is most nurses have schedules that are, we see our patients twice a week a lot of times, and they're seen Monday and Thursday or Tuesday, Friday. And I want to talk a little bit about how to help yourself be super organized when it comes to the days of the week that you're seeing your patients, because it can be real easy if you're not careful to have 10-hour Mondays and 6-hour Thursdays. Okay. And I want to plant a few seeds with you today to consider how you are managing your patients and what days of the week you are seeing them on. I think Mondays can be a real popular day to have a lot of visits because it can be 2 to 3 days since we've seen a patient. And so I save my highest risk patients to be seen on Mondays and Thursdays because I want to be able to come see them after a long weekend because they haven't been seen since Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's Monday again. They haven't been seen for a while. But I think it is really important that we don't let any of our patients become addicted to a certain day or time. Now, does this mean that we don't have some kind of a routine that we operate with our patients so they kind of know when they're going to see us? That is important. That is important. But our patients and their families also have to understand that this work is very, very fluid. And I try to let my patients and families know that I don't let my Mondays become too full because I have to make myself available to see patients on Monday who maybe had a bad weekend or they've had a change in condition over the weekend, and I have to move them to a Monday. So my Mondays tend to only have 3 to 4 people that are used to seeing me on those days. And generally I save those for people who are high risk and I'm concerned that they are going to decline quickly. So I save, so I continue to keep them on Mondays and Thursdays. But if they, and I warn them about this, okay, I have you on Mondays and Thursdays right now, but if, you know, but if you tend to settle in and we feel like we've got your situation managed well and your symptoms are under control, don't be surprised if I have to move you to a Tuesday, Friday, because we're getting you settled and you're comfortable. I think so much of what we do in this work is all about our communication and making sure our patients and their families aren't in the dark, so that when we come up to them and say, hey, it's time for me to move you off of Mondays and Thursdays, I need to move you to Tuesday, Friday, or whatever that might need to look like, or even a Tuesday, Thursday. It's okay for us to see patients a couple days apart. Not everybody has to be so far apart in their visits. But I just tell them, I tend to have my Tuesdays and Fridays for my patients who are a little bit lower risk because I've got you settled and you seem to be in a bit of a plateau. Nobody totally plateaus in hospice. I mean, I mean, there's some nuances there, you know. But our whole goal here is to get away from all of our patients expecting to see us on Mondays. If we have 10 patients and we're doing 6 or 7 visits on a Monday, there's an issue there, and we need to take a look at that. The second thing that we need to be sure we're doing so that we have control of our days and they don't have control of us is starting early. So this can actually become somewhat, I get some pushback on this subject a lot, but we really should be, our strategy should be every day of the week that we're making our first visit by our company start time. So I leave that kind of open because every company has a different start time. Some companies work 8 to 4:30, some are 8 to 5 with an hour lunch. Our company is 8:30 to 5. But we should be very intentional about being at our first visit by company starting time. So if our company, if we're expected to be at work by 8, we need to be at our first patient's house. I say no later than maybe 8:30. If it does take you some time to get up and going and check some messages and things like that. But I've run into a lot of nurses over the years that it takes them 2 hours to get their day started. And I really scratch my head sometimes going, what are we doing during that time? How much of yesterday did we drag over into today? And that's a really bad habit to get yourself into, that if you are finishing Monday and it's not all done and you're dragging some of Monday into Tuesday, you know, that's a real problem. That's a snowball that's really going to have you way behind by the end of the week. And you're going to be spending a lot of your weekend trying to get caught up on your charting and your documentation. So let's make sure that every single day of the week that we are figuring out how to make sure that we're able to start at 8 or 8:30 or 9, depending on what time your company is expecting you to have started your day. How can we make sure that we're actually seeing patients at those times and not, and it can be a challenge sometimes because we do have those patients who don't want to be woken up or gotten up very early. And I'm not saying you can't accommodate some of those folks, because you can, but there are going to be times when you're going to have to put your foot down and say, listen, you know, I have to be able to get my day started at a reasonable time. And generally, I've always been able to find folks who I can make earlier visits. There are plenty of people who are still early morning people, or maybe they're in some kind of a facility, maybe assisted living or long-term care. Those folks are always up more early, and you can get your day started there. And of course, always see those actively dying patients first. I'll never understand why people save any of those kinds of patients for later in the day. Those people aren't sleeping. Their whole life is circled around a patient who is dying and is close to the end. Nobody is sleeping in the house. Those are definitely patients you can get to nice and early in the morning. One big important thing is having no incomplete visits when your day comes to an end. Please, please, please don't get home and begin your home life if your charting for that day isn't 100% done. This will snowball on you. This will really become something that eats away at your time and eats away at your family time and catches up with you by the end of the week. So don't let that be something that happens to you, okay? Don't drag one day into another. So let's be sure that we plan our day ahead of time, that we stop to think about who we're seeing that day and what the expectations they may have on our schedule. And if, are we going to be able to be successful with all of them today? You know, Mrs. Jones, you know, do we understand before we even start our day how long we're going to be there? And I actually engage in some self-talk before I start my day or when I'm planning my schedule out for the day. And I'll say this to myself, and I kind of have this in quotes because in my article I type this all out, and I say to myself, okay, so I will be at Jones by 8 a.m., and my charting should be done, and I'll be in my car by 8:45.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I have had some members at the hospice nursing community request some kind of a support group to help fight burnout. And so I have started 2 burnout support groups at the hospicenursingcommunity.com just to help everybody. And so these support groups meet twice a month on the second Thursday and the second Sunday of the month. And so we're going to be doing that. And I wanted to make sure you understood or knew that these will be faith-friendly support groups. And it doesn't mean they'll be preaching or anything strange like that, but I might use devotionals. I might pull something out of the Bible, maybe out of Psalms or something, but just there might be sections of the group that deal with matters of faith. And I hope that is of interest to you. It can be found in the community events section of the community. So if you would consider joining, I think it would help you. It's going to help me. I need it, I think, as much as anybody does. So join a burnout support group at thehospicenursingcommunity.com.
Then I'm going to travel to see Smith, and that will take me about 20 minutes to get there. So I'll get there about 9:05. And then I will be done with them, and then I'll head to Bubba, I just made that name up, who is about 30 minutes away, and I'll be there from about 11:15 to noon. And so now I have 3 visits done, and it's noon, or maybe 1 if things got a little bit away from me, or maybe if I had to spend some extra time educating somebody. But I do a lot of self-talk when I'm planning, or like when I'm riding with a nurse and we're going to talk about our day before we get it started. Or maybe I'm going to talk about it their day tomorrow. Maybe it's a Tuesday and I'm like, okay, you and I are going to meet at the office Wednesday morning. So let's talk about who we're going to see tomorrow. And especially if he or she has really been struggling with being everywhere for 2 hours, then I'm going to talk to them and say, okay, tell me why your visits are so long at this house. What is happening in there? Well, the son always comes in and, you know, and wants to talk about a lot of stuff, and I just kind of get distracted, or they always end up asking me something that's new. And so I begin to coach and talk them through that and saying, okay, well, let's take a few minutes here and let's talk about this visit and how we can get that control back. And what strategies do we need to employ on that visit to get it more in control? Do we need to reach out to that family member who waits till the end of the visit to come downstairs and start asking questions? And if they do that a lot, then when we walk in the door, let's get them. Hey, Johnny's not come down. Go ahead and call Johnny and have him come on down so we can talk about stuff. So, because I know he always has a lot of questions for me. And what you're doing is you're trying to take control of that household and get it more organized so that you can be timely in your movement around for the day, so that your day's not taking control of you. You're taking control of it. Okay. How about this thought? Everything at the bedside. So this is something to really think about for a couple of minutes, because I talk about charting at the bedside, but there is a lot more that you can do at the bedside besides just charting. And maybe it makes some nurses uncomfortable to have too many conversations with outside people at the bedside, but I'm going to tell you right now that we need to become more comfortable with that. This is very, very important. So I want you to think about this. What all can I do at the bedside in the home before I leave? How about calling the pharmacy? So we're making our visit and we're talking to our family, and they mention that they need more nebulizer medication. Okay, well, what other meds do we need to look at? Let me see your med box. And you get out their meds and you start looking through it, or maybe you do the pill box for them and you've noticed 3 or 4 meds that need to be refilled. Okay, I'm going to call the pharmacy right now. And I grab my phone and I call that pharmacy right in front of them. If they're worried that they have an infection, I call the doctor right in front of them. I make all of my phone calls. You know, if we've got a piece of equipment that's not working, I'm going to pick up my phone and say, hey, I'm not ignoring you, but I'm communicating this to my office right now or the equipment company or whatever. And this helps set their mind at ease because they've watched you order the equipment. They've watched you make sure they're getting their medication refilled. You do everything with the patient. And that way, if something goes wrong later, they're not mad at you, right? Because they know that you reached out to their family or that you reached out to the pharmacy, that you called the right person to make sure they knew that you needed something, okay? And I'll tell you right now, so I am actually on my fifth EMR. I made a list when I was working on the show notes for this. I made a list of all the different EMRs that I've worked with over the years. And so my first EMR was with Suncoast when I was with Northcare. And then after that, I went to Asana and worked with Homecare Homebase. After my job after that, I had NetSmart. And then after that, I worked for a company that was using a system that was kind of old, actually, called CPC or Care Plan Charting. And then we got bought out and they transitioned us back to Homecare Homebase. So I worked with them again. And where I am now, I work with Healthcare First, and we're getting ready to transition to Matrix Care this year. And so with all of these EMRs, I have been able to do all of my charting at the bedside with every single one of them. I have learned how. And Matrix Care is coming up, and I've never seen it. We demoed it for a couple of days, but I can guarantee you I will master that system and teach my nurses to do the same, and we will all become bedside charters with this system as well. And we will do everything. I teach all of my staff to do everything at the bedside, charting, entering new orders. In Healthcare First, we have to enter our visit frequencies and place visits on the calendars, which I know you have to do in NetSmart as well. We do all of that as much as we can with the patient while we're there. Because this is just important to be this organized. And to when you leave one house, everything there is completely finished, completely done, and you're getting in your car, maybe finishing up a few items in your car. I know a lot of people want to chart their narrative note in the car. That's great. Get that done and grab out your whatever it is you use to chart your mileage and plan your next visit. Call that patient. I'm on my way to you, and we're going to do it all again at the next house. Point number five in my notes is to embrace the tension. So I've talked about that in some previous episodes, the importance of embracing the tension. And that is the tension that I'm talking about embracing is that feeling that we get in our gut that we need to get moving on to the next visit or to finish what we've got going. And sometimes we give up and put away all of our stuff or don't make that phone call at the bedside or don't finish charting or don't put in our vitals or whatever. And we just kind of crash because we feel that tension in our stomach to get moving. And what I mean by embrace the tension means that instead of giving up, you embrace that tension, keep feeling it in your gut, and let it teach you to be faster. And I've talked about that some, so I won't belabor that point any longer than I need to. But let the tension that you feel to hurry up and get done make you faster at your job.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
If you are new to hospice or considering hospice, then in September of 2022, I created the website for you. I created thehospicenursingcommunity.com. What started out as a simple community has become a large library of video trainings. Thehospicenursingcommunity.com now has over 45 video coaching sessions covering subjects such as bedside charting, the Hospice Comfort Kit, the four levels of care, how to interview for a hospice job, and so much more. I just completed a 7-part series for case managers, and I'm getting ready to start a series on the PPS scale. The HospiceNursingCommunity.com is available for just $4.99 per month for full access. Head over to the HospiceNursingCommunity.com for hope, help, and encouragement. And remember, hospice nursing doesn't get easier. You just get better at it. So let's get better at it together.
And then how about start with the sickest patient every day? Do the hardest work first. This is a challenge for many of us to do. We like to put off the hard work. Maybe we think it's better to put the hard work off until the last visit of the day. Let's save that sickest patient for the last visit of the day. That is not a smart move for us. Let's just think this through a little bit. That's the patient that's most likely to take you the longest. So that's where you need to start. And if you're communicating with your caseload well enough, many times I've had to call up patients and say, hey, I know I usually see you first thing, but I have another patient who's on daily visits. I'm going to have to start with them. I'm going to bump you to my second visit, but I will call you when I'm headed your way. You know, they're only 10 or 15 or 20 or whatever it is. And sometimes I'll just reach out to them in the morning or maybe the night before and say, hey, I usually see you first thing. You're going to be number two because I've got somebody not doing well. And I've seen most of my families and everything going, oh, that I completely understand, because they know that we're going to do that for them when their time comes. And they're going to understand that. So please always start with your sickest patient, your most challenging patient, the patient who needs you the most first. Okay. And then let's talk about don't waste waiting. So there is a lot of waiting when it comes to hospice. We do a lot of waiting in hospice. If we are with a patient who's having a lot of symptoms that we're trying to help manage, and we're on the phone with the doctor and we're trying some different dosages, sometimes we have to sit there and we have to wait for that patient for that medication to kick in and begin to take effect. So that's a 45 minute to a 1 hour wait, depending on the medication and the route, whether it's, you know, sublingual or if it's IV, which we don't do a whole lot of in hospice, but does happen. So if you're going to be sitting there for 45 minutes waiting for a medication to kick in, what are the other things you can do while you're sitting there at the bedside? I remember 2 Christmases ago, so this would have been just the Christmas of 2020, I had to take some call. I am in administration, but I also help with call, and I got called out in the middle of the night, Christmas Eve, for a death. It was actually one of my patients that had died. And so I was kind of glad to be a familiar face, but it was a long way from home. And I got all the way out there. But being Christmas Eve like it was, it took almost 3 hours for the funeral home to arrive to remove their loved one from the home. Well, they were all very talkative, and it would have been really easy for me to just sit there and visit with them. But what I ended up doing was I politely said, hey, I need to set up over here and get a few things done. And they were very understanding. And I set up my computer in the corner, and I got everything done I could possibly think of for the next week. I worked on getting my schedule set up. I got a bunch of IDT and IDG notes done. And that's just this concept that says don't waste waiting, that there are times in hospice when we're at people's homes and we're, quote, stuck there, where we can't really leave yet, or we're waiting on something else to happen. This is a really good time to get into our computer and work on some things that might be outstanding. Do we have some visit frequencies that need to be updated? Do we have home health aid plans of care that we need to update? What is it that we can accomplish? So take a little sticky note and put that on maybe your rearview mirror of your car that says, don't waste waiting. Don't let yourself be sitting in a parking lot or a driveway or somebody's living room with nothing to do, there's always something to do. Keep your devices charged. And when there is time to actually, when you're sitting around waiting for something, find something useful and get it done. Something on your list that you need to get off of. Any incomplete visits from previous days that you could sit down and knock out and get done. That's going to help you with your time management. So don't waste. There's no more wasting the waiting. So something that I get questioned about a lot when I talk about time organization, when I talk about starting early, is some organizations have stand-up calls where every morning at 8 or 8:30, 8:15, 8:45, whatever that is, 5 days a week, everybody has to dial in and we listen to the night shift, maybe give report or whatever it is. And some companies have those every single day. And I've been asked before, what do you want me to do about that? How do I work around that? And I wish I had an easy answer for you. And I really actually don't. I think that having a stand-up call every single day, I think can be detrimental. Now, at my one of my companies, we were forced to do it. We had to do it. So me and my clinical director, this is when I was an administrator, we did ours in 8 to 10 minutes. Our goal was less than 10 minutes so that our nurses, we didn't burn up a bunch of their time. So we got to everything quick. Nobody wasted any time. We were in and out of that call 8 to 10 minutes. And I know it doesn't work that way for everybody, but if you're in leadership right now and you have a stand-up call for your field staff that is lasting 30 minutes every single day, you need to rethink that. I'm not afraid to say that to you. You need to take a look at that and find out, is there a way we can shut this down? Because a 30-minute stand-up call, I mean, that's half of a hospice visit right there. And, you know, we're here to help our staff and not make their jobs harder. So I would challenge you to make sure that this stand-up call isn't something that's getting in the way of your staff being successful. Do you need to shorten it up? Do you need to move it to a different time? Where I work now, we just have one a week where our administrator updates us on everything that happened for the week, makes any announcements. We still get this thing done in 15 to 20 minutes at the most, and we do it on Mondays. So we only have one. So, but if you do have these stand-up calls, and let's say they're scheduled at 8:30, but your day starts at 8. Some nurses do find a way to actually see some patients before that, facility patients or whatever. I still want us to be people who work 8 to 4:30, work in that 8-hour, 9-hour, whatever it is, time frame. But I do understand some of the nurses who say, listen, I'm going to have to be able to make at least one visit before that stand-up call so that I can be successful in my day. So I personally would rather start early than work late. That's just me. I'm better at getting up early and getting out early than I am just working late. And sometimes those are decisions you have to make for yourself. But I just want to remind everybody that the goal of this show and my goal for you to help you with your work-life balance and to help you be more successful at hospice is I ultimately want you to be able to be successful from these hours from 8 to 5 so that you can have time with your family before and after work, and so that this work doesn't just swallow you up 100% and take you down. And it can be done. And we do have the 90-10 rule here that says 90% of the time. I believe that only 10% of your 40-hour week should happen at home. Now, that's 4 hours at home, so maybe an hour a day at the most. But I don't want to see you spending 2 or 3 hours on the weekend and then an hour every day at home. And so that instead of working 40 hours, you're working 50 hours. That is just not my goal for you. And I think this can be done. And I've watched it done. And I've coached other hospice nurses to get it done. And yeah, they do have some work that they still get stuck doing at home on the evenings here or there or the weekends. But my goal is for that to only be 4 hours a week, just 4 hours at the most. And a lot of times it can be even less, but it has so much to do with being intentional about, you know, making sure that we do have that new schedule every week, that we're intentional with our families, that we keep them up to date, that they understand that we may have to move them around to accommodate for travel and distance and time. And most people will want to work with us on these things. They don't want to see nurses that are burned out. I think most people realize that burnout is heavy with nurses. And most people don't want to be the cause of that. But if we don't have a plan with how we want to operate in our hospice profession, and if we just kind of get up and let our days happen to us and don't really have an idea of what each day should look like and how long we're willing to be able to stay at people's homes, then this job can take over. And I just see too much of it. I see so much burnout in this work, and I don't want to see that for you. I don't want to see you get burned out. I want you to stay in hospice, and I want you to love it, and I want you to, but I want you to have that balance so that when it is time to get up and go do it in the morning, you're excited to be out there helping people, because this job can drain you emotionally, but it can also speak to your heart, and you can feel like you've really helped people in such a unique and challenging way. And I want you to be able to experience that. So I don't want you to give up. I don't want you to stop. I want you to believe that 8 to 5 is a worthwhile goal for you as a professional, that you can get this job done in an 8 to 9 hour day with your lunch. You do get a lunch sometimes, right? Yes, you do. And I believe you can. So anyway, I think that's mostly it for today's episode. I do want you to be sure to check out the show notes at confessionsofahospicenurse.net. I am going to find a way to get my schedule embedded in there for you to be able to download, so that you can, I'll put some fake names and addresses and stuff in there and find a way to get it to you at the website. So maybe you can take a look at this thing and use it for your own. It's not overly fancy or anything. It's pretty easy to use in a spreadsheet, and I teach a lot of my staff how to use it, and I think it might be beneficial to some of my listeners. So just check it out at the Facebook, or not Facebook, at my website at confessionsofahospicenurse.net. You can just email me as well. Got to get the music going, right? At the end of the show. So listen, thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. And you should call me right now. Grab your phone at 816-834-9191 and leave me some feedback. Let me know what you think of the show. This is episode 6. We've got 6 episodes in, and it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed recording these. I plan to keep going here for a while, as long as I feel like people are finding them useful. But go ahead and drop me an email if you want it, james@confessionsofahospicenurse.net, and I will be glad to get you that spreadsheet that I use for my schedule. I think you might like that. But check it out and come and visit me. Don't forget to embrace the tension. Yes, there's a lot of tension in this job, isn't there? Not all the tension's good, I get that. But any tension that is pushing you to get to the next patient, use that to make it fast. You'll be glad you did. This has been episode 6 of the Hospice Nursing Podcast for January 16th, 2022.